Welcome to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, presented to you by Hetra University. If you've landed here, you're probably passionate about how horses help people. This podcast is for anyone who helps others experience the benefits of horses or those who have experienced it themselves. If you're in the equine assisted services industry, we're here to help you. If you're here just to learn more, you're in the right place. Welcome to your community of like-minded people, where you will hear stories, education, science, and explanations about how what we do is so much more than just a pony ride. And now, from the Hetra campus in Gretna, Nebraska, here's your host, occupational therapist and CTRI, Katie Ott.
Thanks for stopping by the show, Dr. Bailey. We appreciate you.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Well, we're excited today to learn about the Polyvagal Equine Institute and what all those big words mean and what you guys are doing and your fabulous work. And but first, let's kind of kick things off with explaining yourself, who you are, and how you ended up where you are.
That's a tough one. I am a psychologist in Northern California and have been in the field with animal assisted therapy since about 1991. I have a lifelong love affair with horses. I wrote a self-published book called Polyvagal Principles, Equine Connections, I believe that's it. And in it, I really talk about my first horse that was my co-regulator. She was the one that sort of helped me deal with lots of chaos in my life. So I think that all the work I do is with a shout to my horse, Lockett, because she got me through the tough times of being a kid. So fast forward, as a psychologist, I've worked with a lot of what we call complex case scenarios, done a lot of familial and non-familial abduction work, a lot of complex trauma, which I think any trauma is complex, but maybe ones that have more than one layer involved. And I live in Sonoma County, raised 4.5 kids. I say a half because one wasn't with us quite as much as the other ones. But this is my love. So, and the Polyvagal Equine Institute is a labor of love created by my lifelong friend, Margie McDonald, who is an incredible riding trainer, and JC Dugard, who is very open in saying that she was sort of deposited in my life 14 years ago after she was recovered from an 18-year abduction with her two children and her whole family. And what I like to say about JC is that she was the most together human being I ever met. And my horses took her in to their herd and helped me help her kind of reintegrate back into the world. So that's a big mouthful.
Wow, what an incredible story. I just feel like your journey has very organically kind of led yourself to what is now the Polyvagal Equine Institute. And you guys have a fabulous website. I've followed along with you guys for a while now, and you guys are doing some really great work. So I'm excited for you to tell us about kind of what the PVEI is and the work that you guys do.
Yes. And then the first thing I'm going to tell you, Katie, given the work you do, I always forget to say this, but I am severely dyslexic. So I went through graduate school the end of the 80s, as I said, early 90s, and had all of my papers typed. And the most interesting thing about this, and I share this because I told you it is important to be shining a light for people coming behind us. And I really think that sometimes people listen to these podcasts and they're like, oh, I can relate. So when the person that typed my papers, because there were typewriters, although there were some computers, she was leaving my senior year of grad school and getting my doctorate. And she said, I'm going to be leaving and you need to find someone to replace me. And I went, oh my God, how? And she said, you just need someone to type it. And I said, you mean you haven't changed anything all these years? She said, no, I typed it exactly how you said it. I just put the punctuation where it belonged. So I just share that because I know I'm not the only dyslexic out there. I'm not the only one that has a learning difference style. And I say that to shine a beacon, ahead for everybody who's like, I can't do it. It took a lot of passion. And the horses were there for me all along. Horses taught me left from right. I couldn't figure out how to post a diagonal on a horse. And it was because I finally put a rubber band on my wrist and I'd be like, oh, this is the left, this is the right. And so that's another piece. So Polyvagal Equine Institute. Yes. It is the kind of labor of love for all the years of the complex work that we did. And what I can tell you, the secret sauce of our work has really been being authentic and present and caring and compassionate. And I really do believe that, you know, all the evidence-based theory stuff is very important, but really understanding how to really show up and be present and compassionate to people is what horses teach us. So we started the Polyvagal Equine Institute in the hopes to encourage other clinicians, coaches, individuals to really learn how to kind of get out of their head and back into the body. Mm-hmm. The polyvagal theory was this theory started by Dr. Stephen Porges, and it has to do with this amazing vagal nerve, which wanders throughout its many parts of our body, innervating, meaning connecting into many different organs. Mm-hmm. And over many years, it has developed and evolved. So originally it was really responsible for the freeze response, which in polyvagal terms we call dorsal, the sympathetic, which we all know, the fight or flight, or this ventrovagal of social connection. And what Porges says is that it isn't just fight, flight, freeze, it's fight, flight, freeze, socially connect. Mm. And in my mind, that's what horses teach us to do. If we're really, really conscious and get out of our head and out of old narratives that are up there and get out of, you know, even past therapy that's told us why we do what, and just really listen to our bodies the way they do. And then what they also teach us is the incredible capacity to be flexible. They can startle when they see that rock or that jacket on the fence, and then 2 minutes later, they can calm down, particularly if you're riding or even leading them, you're able to ground yourself enough to co-regulate.
Mm-hmm. That's something that having horses really taught me. I grew up a very anxious kid, had my own trauma story myself. And like when I started really getting into doing some therapy with my equine partners and really starting to focus on riding and learning all these fancy riding skills. And what really it taught me was that I have to regulate myself, and the horse kind of teaches you that, where you like, you can't hold on to that stuff. So if you do have a spook, you do have something, you need to stay calm, focus on what you're doing, let it go and keep going. Right. And that was something that was like a foreign concept to, you know, me 10 years ago even. And so it's amazing how much that transfers into your daily life, even when you're not with your horses anymore.
And you can do it. One of the things we've done with Polyvagal Equine Institute, and I really do hope that you guys go and look at it and see what we're doing. And we're starting a library of horse videos that you can watch in your office to kind of, those of us who are lucky enough to get near horses know that it's really about being with the horses, but you can learn a lot from watching them. And that's that thing that they teach us, sort of how to settle back in and not hold on to something. That's what I think. I have a little horse now, and I've also over the years that have been very blessed with some very fancy horses. And they're behind me. I don't show anymore. And right now I have a recovered bucking horse plus some other horses. But the first 6 months I had that guy, all he would do is go up and down. He wouldn't go forward. And, you know, people would be like, something's wrong with his back. Something's wrong. He just was like, you are not going to make me do this. And so for 6 months, I just had to sit there. It was very embarrassing. I felt like a little kid at riding camp, right? You know, on the pony that won't go.
Yeah.
But I just learned to let go of my anger, let go of frustration, let go of an agenda, because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm an old lady riding a horse. What if he does that? And now I'm so happy to say he's like the best trail horse I've ever gotten. He'll go anywhere with me. We're like amazing. Every once in a while, he goes back into make me tail swishing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, just stay with the rhythm. Don't pay any attention. And then we'll go forward. So it is amazing what they teach us.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit more about kind of the polyvagal theory and like how that applies to like treatment that you're doing or the things that you're doing in the arena?
So the polyvagal theory, how we ended up, how I ended up learning about it was when JC came to me. Prior to that, I'd really been looking at the learned helplessness model of why people don't leave. And so my working theory was people just give up. But that didn't fit because the survivors, victims, survivors, warriors that I met, it wasn't that they gave up. Yeah. They had a secret power of somehow to continue to fight, like, or not even fight, to adjust to what was just impossible circumstances. Mm-hmm. So JC and I began to talk. And after about a year and a half, it's kind of unusual to be a therapist who sort of morphs into this relationship with a client. And when I say relationship, I mean a collegial relationship. At one point, she said to me, I want you to be a mentor. And as I said, when she first came into my work, she was had done a lot of work by herself for the 18 years in the backyard. Mm-hmm. So we started to say, how can we tell people that it's not Stockholm? How can we explain to people that you don't fall in love with your captor? And we talked to other incredible ladies. Well, all the warriors and survivors that I talk with are incredible, but the names people know, like Elizabeth Smart, who became a friend, who said Stockholm is just offensive. Mm-hmm. So we were looking for a theory and we stumbled on polyvagal theory, which is really the science of feeling safe. Mm-hmm. So we contacted Dr. Porges through a friend of mine in 2012, and we flew back and had dinner with him and his wife, Sue Carter, and came up with this idea of appeasement, which is this like superpower that somebody has in extreme threat where they can be really scared, but then access this ventral vagal pathway, this social pathway, this ability to sort of connect with someone. Now, it's not the word fawn, and I have big problems with the word fawn, but a lot of your listeners may not, mm-hmm. but it's not a vulnerable. It's a way of managing the events around them to feel safe. And it's unconscious. You can't consciously say, oh, I'm going to do this for this. Years later, for example, Elizabeth Smart said she realized that she had to be kind mm-hmm. and really wanted to be kind so that maybe she could make him kind. But it wasn't a conscious thought. It was in the body, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I've heard of... obviously everybody I'm sure has heard of the fight, flight, you know, all of those like traditional things, but I think that social pathway is, that makes so much sense. It really does. It's an unconscious thing.
It really does. And it also goes back to, it's very interesting because I know that the early psychoanalytic, psychodynamic people were very misogynistic, but I do know people like Winnicott, who was one of the earlier writers, talked about transitioning space, talked about an environment to create safety where someone could be alone in the presence of another. And when you take those words and you put polyvagal, you're talking about dorsal. You're talking about the ability to be immobile without fear. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, your heart rate has to slow down. All of these things need to happen in your body. Mm-hmm. So the whole premise, when you ask, well, what does this have to do with what you guys work with? The whole premise is from the first contact with a client, from the first second that they enter your place, you give them the message that this is a very safe place, a protected space, not like we have to protect you, because these people have gone through so much more than I have. So, you know, but this is protect. So that means if you're working in a public barn, you might want to think about being sure that nobody's there. Mm-hmm. Or you might be sure that, let's say, the stall cleaner's there and the same person is there to ride their horse, that they're introduced mm-hmm. to the individual or to the group so that there's not random people. Because in order to really, really flourish and connect with people when you've been through trauma, you have to feel safe and you have to be able to feel like it's okay to be somewhat vulnerable. Mm-hmm. That's to me where the whole polyvagal theory comes in. The other piece to understand with polyvagal is that there's blended states. So it's not like ventral's the only way to go. I mean, that would be a little bit, I get myself in trouble with the things I say, so I'm not going to say what I was thinking. I'm going to filter that one out. But you need to be able to, for example, have sympathetic arousal with ventral oversight, meaning that's play. Now with play, early on, we have this side-by-side parallel play, as you know,
right?
And then as you go along, you're able to throw the ball together. So there's some sympathetic, the person catches the ball, all those type of things. And some of this we find with many of the adults and groups we work with or have worked with over the years, they forget how to play. They forget how to feel all of this in their body. And I know you know that as an OT.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it the coolest thing in the whole world is to watch someone learn to play?
Yes, it's my favorite. Like a lot of times with my children who have autism, and that parallel play is the universe they live in. And it's not, you know, they don't do a ton of that kind of co-play. And then you start to see them understand that, oh, your reactions, you know, evoke something in me. And I like that. And then that's where that social piece comes in. And it's beautiful.
And then they can look at you for a minute, because what's really interesting with the vagal pathways, and, you know, I am a psychologist, but I don't try to pretend that I'm a neuropsychologist or this and that, because frankly, I get all confused sometimes. You know, I know what I know is what I know is what it feels like.
Yeah.
And I know things like the ventral pathways innervate, meaning they connect into the facial muscles. So you mentioned autism. What Stephen Porges in his early research did was he still has his safe and sound protocol, where there's a sound that he observed when there's a protocol that the safe and sound protocol is about, where you listen to sounds in a titrated way to music, and you can start seeing the facial muscles soften above mm-hmm. the nose. And so he started to look at, well, what does this have to do with ventral pathways? And whatever that is, messages of safety are begun to receive so that the people can relax down. Because that's that whole thing. Again, it's the science of feeling safe.
Yes. Interesting. So then how did, I mean, obviously the horses made their entrance onto the scene because they had been so beneficial for you. Kind of how did that piece start to overlay then?
So in 1989, I got involved with a research project. And to some of your listeners, it's like, oh, big deal. But it was one of the very first projects that took animals into state hospitals. And in this particular, if it could have been a horse, I would have loved that. But there were pigs and other animals. And there was a psychotic young man in this is way a state hospital who actually spoke for the first time anyone had heard him in X amount of years on the unit when he saw the pig and started talking like pig and started, actually the pig peed on his lap. And I thought, oh my God, there goes everything, because we'd had to sign all this stuff. And so anyone listening, just know when there's a big mistake, a big thing like that in the work you do, make lemonade out of it. He, thank goodness, stood up and said, pig? And so everybody forgot that piece. So I was also working with my own horses at the same time, not my own horses, but working as an assistant trainer. Mm-hmm. And what I began to see at about 1989, when I would go out, and I'm a good rider, but I'm not that, you know, the horses don't salute at me, they challenge me. So I used to go out and get the horses ready for Margie to come ride. And what I began to see the world through ride the horse you're on, and really how can you help this horse be the best horse they are? Mm-hmm. And I got all into this stuff. And so then I was like, I need to take this into grad school. And at the time I was so afraid of grad school. Again, remember, very dyslexic, very frightened of all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Went into grad school, and my first paper in grad school for my master's thesis was on women that own horses. And what we looked at is that women that own horses have what's called a very high military leadership skill, which is at the time was not really found with women. And it's not like bang, bang, shoot 'em. It was like what you find in West Point cadets. George Washington was a great, great leader. His horseback skills were renowned. And so we would see this in these women that owned horses as opposed to women that didn't. So that's when I said, this has got to be helpful to other people, not just me. Mm-hmm. So I very secretly was doing this work because my chair of my dissertation at the time said to me, don't let anyone know you're doing this because they'll think you're a kook. So here I am in 2023. Some people still think I'm a kook, but and I sometimes kick myself because I did have like 10 years where I just didn't do it because I was having to pay bills. I was a single mom for a while. And I kind of call it coming out of the closet in 2006. Mm-hmm. So I had very, you know, I had a few people coming to do the horses secretly. I had dogs coming in the office. But then in 2006, I went, this is ridiculous, and really came out.
Let it fly.
Let it fly.
There you go.
And I really do believe one of the things that makes us really different with polyvagal is I really believe it's the collaboration between the client, the facilitators, and the horses. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, I think some of the incredible programs that have done equine learning prior to this or equine therapy, they forget that the horse's individual nervous system brings as much as the facilitators. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say to people doing this work is make sure your facilitators, if you're working with more than one at the same time, which I kind of aspire to with complex cases, be sure you know your relationships well. Be sure you model what you're trying to teach your clients. And it isn't just in the handbook of how to have a good program. It should really be ingrained in your fiber. Mm-hmm. You know, how do I really embody the things that I'm trying to teach?
Right.
And trying to present and trying to help people get to.
Mm-hmm. So do you guys have, you don't have like a certification or anything by that means, or are you guys, how would you describe, I guess, your organization?
Well, Katie, how nice of you to ask. We just put our first group of 22 through. And what we do right now is we have let's say you just wanted to take some classes. You're absolutely welcome to. We have webinars. They're not very expensive. We do have a membership, which is also not very expensive. But if you're a member, you get access to our barn chats. We've got one with Stephen Porges, Lynn Thomas from originally used to be Egala, now with Arch, Linda Kahano, all different people, Sue Carter. So you can, that would be the membership, and you can take some of the classes. If you want to be certified or accredited, you have to do our 3-day in person. You have to do 6 months of on-demand education classes. So that's fine for that. And then if you want to do the accreditation, you have to do another 6 months of consultation. And then what we also have on our sites is like one that we have a new program we're kicking off called Polyvagal Ponies. And it's for nervous system training. And what we designed it for was for originally for maybe people that maybe would have to go testify in court or had some event that was really scaring them that they needed to internalize a sense of safety. Mm-hmm. And really secret, but it's a protocol. And we're actually, University of Alabama is studying it. It's grooming and some smells and a picture that you take with you. So it's 8 sessions specifically designed so that they can access it when that scary moment comes up.
That happens.
Love you to look into it, Katie, because it'd be really fun if you guys are doing it in Nebraska.
Yeah,
we're really liking it. And we think what we're going to see, you're not supposed to do it with research, but we think what the University of Alabama Social Work School is going to see is that this protocol within a beautiful barn, within lots of good smells, within a comfortable environment can help people learn how to access in themselves later. Because so much of the early research around horse stuff was just the horse, but right. The horses can't do it all alone. You know, I mean, you could have the most beautiful horse in a very angry barn with, you know, horse poop everywhere and growling dogs, and it's not going to do the same thing.
Right.
And so what we're trying to say is we're all part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I really like that concept, because I think so many times people say, okay, well, yeah, I'm relaxed when I'm around the horse or whatever, but the horse isn't with me when I'm in, you know, a board meeting at 2:00 in the afternoon or whatever it is, right? So how are we, you know, training and teaching and helping people to harness that, you know, energy that they feel in the barn and then being able to apply it in other areas?
Yeah, I think what's cool is that I have, despite maybe my reputation, I really listen. And so there was a woman named, I believe, Jennifer Lerner, who is a psychiatrist who I just adored. She's from North Carolina, but she shared me with her research from a long time ago about group work. Mm-hmm. With the horses. And that's exactly what happened, was it didn't transfer later. In the moment, it was terrific. And so ever since I had this conversation with her some time ago, it's like, gosh, what can we do? And then we started looking at the research on olfactory, on smell, the research on little pictures of kitties and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And we thought, okay, let's see if we can transfer. So we're kicking that off. We have a webinar on that and people can buy the protocol. We're kicking it off this summer and we're going to collect as much data as we can.
Yeah.
Because it's so obvious. It makes such sense, doesn't it?
It does. And I think that's part of the qualitative part of it, where it's like, it just feels good. It just makes sense. It just happens. But how, why, what, you know, we need all the other boxes checked too, to make it, you know, relevant.
Right. And people tend to one thing I found about me too, is that the more I overthink, the worse it gets. And so what polyvagal theory and horses have done is go into this incredibly complicated gift, which is our nervous system.
Right.
And if you've been through severe trauma, your nervous system probably got you through it. Maybe you got stuck in disassociation because the event was so horrifying. But nevertheless, thank you, nervous system. Now, how can I help my nervous system feel safe?
Right. And I think, I don't know if you can speak a little bit to that, but sort of the concept of like vagal tone, or like how your nervous system holds on to that. And like, what are we doing to, now that I'm out of that stressful situation, like you said, like, thank you for getting me through that. But now that our nervous system is just kind of in that heightened, that, you know, how do we get that back to where we can relax, right?
And that's what my dear friend Deb Dana, who is Stephen Porges's sort of interpreter, I like to say, because she has a whole way of making it really understandable. Hopefully I do too, but hers is a little different language. She talks about anchors. Mm-hmm. So in fact, in a conversation with her and Stephen over dinner at one point, I said, and this was a couple of years ago, I said, I always tell people trauma is not who you are, it's what happened to you. And they jumped on me, rightfully, I guess, and said, no, 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 it's not what happened to you, it's how it's stored in your body. Mm-hmm. And so I did my usual arguing for a couple, you know, minutes about it. And I think about that. I still think that we need to tell people it's not who you are, to get them out of shame, some people, and then understand it's the residual effect of the action in your body. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about vagal tone and all of those things, what we're talking about is the ability to build the flexibility to be able to tolerate these different up and down states, which goes back to play, right? One of my secret weapons in working with people is an ability to have a humor. And so far, I've struck out a few times, I admit, where, you know, people are like, all right, lady. But for the most part, I'm able to use my humor judiciously and help people feel that in their body just for a minute, to feel like you don't have to be protecting yourself like a turtle, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard. And the horses, to be honest, the horses almost do it way before me. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll have someone come in who's so shut down and you're just doing something with maybe a couple loose horses in the arena. Our horses are pretty much we want them to have choice, which means they can be there or not. Although some people, you need to halter the horses so that it's safe. Mm-hmm. We really don't ever have more than, if we have three horses loose together, they all know each other very, very well. Never more, you know. But the whole piece is like, how do you let that person or group have a moment of feeling like they don't have to be so shut down?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how those darn horses feel that, but 9 out of 10 times they got it, and they'll come, you know, walking over with a dandelion in their mouth or, you know, whatever the thing is.
Right.
And, you know, so although Katie, I know people can't see you, but just seeing your smile and talking with you on this, you exude that thing that makes my venture, my heart feel really good. And I think that's what we need to remember, that as facilitators, we have as much a responsibility for our presence as we think these horses do. You know, we're not old style analysts scowling and saying, tell me more about that. But we have to, at least from our perspective, we have to factor ourselves into the whatever it is that I'm saying.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I say all the time that, like, we have to, because for me, I work with a lot of children that have autism and some more complex behavioral things. And so if you don't meet their chaos with the calm, then we're both in chaos. So you have to, like, it's for me, I totally agree. We do have a huge role in what we're doing. I mean, I know the horses are fantastic, but we also need to be the calm for people that don't feel like they have a lot of that, you know?
And your calm may not, like, I'm a Boston girl and I run high. And I, you know, I am very comfortable with sympathetic juice going. I do know enough to bring it down when I need to. I have to consciously kind of gauge what the other person is like. But I think that's so important, particularly when we work with the neurodiverse population, which personally, I think we are all neurodiverse in a lot of ways.
What's normal anyway?
We really need to learn how to kind of gauge impact both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
This episode of the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast is sponsored in part by
Equiforce. Equiforce is a database that allows you to track every facet of your organization, from horse, donor, and volunteer management to scheduling, grant tracking, incident reports, and tracking participant progress too. This is not a one-size-fits-all setup. Instead, Equiforce personally works with you to learn how your facility functions and takes note of your specific terminology so that they can create a unique system to match the needs of your organization. And of course, Equiforce provides an ongoing training and support so that your database can grow with you. Visit them at www.equiforce.com. That's EQUI-FORCE.com.
So how would you describe to me a little bit about maybe what a session, you know, in general, maybe what a session might look like while utilizing some of these polyvagal theory kind of concepts, you know, through your guys's model?
So I'll back you up before. So someone contacts, and we're not doing so much direct service anymore. And I only say that because often people like will start calling us for services. What we're trying to do is have groups trained around the country that we personally know where we can say, hey, you know, I know Katie's group in Nebraska, they do great work, you know, here. And that's starting to happen. So really one of the first steps is to get really clear on what the informed consent is. Why is that person coming to you? And who are you? Are you a coach, a seasoned coach? Are you a therapist? You know, what are you bringing in? So let's say two different scenarios. Somebody calls or a group wants to come in to learn how to do more effective communication. Then as if you're working with the horse professional too, and I will say when you're either working with horses that are not personally your own, or when you're working with one or more than one person, it's really important to have more than one set of eyes. Mm-hmm. So you might sit down and then plan, okay, what exactly, who is this group? What horses are we going to use? And what's the goal? Okay, they want autonomic nervous system communication skills. So they might come in. The first step would be, you know, you do all your paperwork, all that important stuff. The horse professional that has already really been thinking about what horse. So, for example, I have a horse here who tends to activate more because she'll walk off on everybody and pretend to chomp people. And so we don't work with her with somebody who's going to be like really shut down for that. So we'll sort of sketch out what that exercise might look like. So for example, with this particular group, I'm thinking of that group that wants to come in and do communication skills. We're most likely to start with that standard watching the horses in the arena, talking about, you know, what
herd dynamics type of thing.
Herd dynamics, or like the old, which one's most like you, or what resonates in your nervous system when you look at this horse? You know, where are they? Prior to that, we've probably given a little polyvagal training. you know, and we use this thing called the carousel. Instead, Dana uses a ladder that shows dorsal, sympathetic, ventral. Ours is a carousel because we like horses. And because when things are moving smoothly, it's all just moving and you don't notice. When we're dysregulated, it's kind of jerky and things don't move as smoothly. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably talk about that and then maybe have them maybe go with the horse that's most like them, talk about what that was that they felt in their body when they went to that horse. So that might be one way. When you do that type of work, you also have to be able to pivot. You have a group that comes in and they're all, you know, blustery and they're not even going to be able to observe. Then maybe you have them do a grooming, you know, three or four horses at once, if you have enough horse handlers to support you, whatever that is. So you have to be, you have to have tricks in your pocket.
Right.
Now, if this is an individual person who's coming for individual work, same thing. Why are they coming? If they're coming because they really want to work on some deep trauma, the first step is to really create this environment of connection, support, safety, probably do some grooming, walking around. If it's somebody who's coming for something else, you have to adjust whatever that is. And I really can't say strongly enough how much informed consent is, because one of the troublesome things right now in the field, yay that it's growing, but it's people really being out of scope. You know, working and doing deep trauma work when, wait a second, this client came around parenting issues and you're not a licensed therapist. I take it very seriously that the emotional safety is as important with the horses as the humans. And sometimes us licensed folks take it a little more seriously because we can lose our license pretty easily. But we should all take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I think that's something that, especially as we get into more of the equine assisted learning, that's something we all need to keep in mind. Where do you think could be a good red flag for, oh, maybe we're getting out of scope?
In the book, Equine Connections, Polyvagal Principles, which is really a basic intro class, I'm thinking about this one situation where I, as a psychologist, was doing a group for girls with academic issues. And we were doing a grooming and they were all wearing big rubber boots that I had. And this is interesting. This is like some years ago, but I love this. So because I'm a doofus and I was doing it alone, I had five girls. The horse, one of my horses, stepped on the front of the boot of this little girl and didn't touch the toe. Oh, my God. And I didn't know what was going on. And she suddenly says, I can't move. And I've, and she said, the horse is on the front, is on my toe. And I was like, no, she goes, not on the toe, on the boot. And so I knew we had some time. And I said, so what are you going to do? Thinking, oh my God, please don't move. And she said, I don't know how to get this horse off my foot. So she gets the horse off the foot. We group for a little bit. We talked, I mean, I didn't deny it. I said, wow, hold on. Let's talk about it for a second. Some of the other kids talked about their own. I said, look, we're really here for the academic work. And I really want to make sure you're safe. I ended up talking to her after contacting her private therapist, which she had, thank goodness. If she hadn't, I would have had to find one. So I think what I'm saying with that is these things will come up. Mm-hmm. But even as a licensed psychologist, my job was not to go into her sexual abuse with this group of her peers that were here around academic stuff. Mm-hmm. And that said informed consent. And I think you know where to go as where not to go, which a lot of people don't know.
Right.
The thing that's cool about polyvagal is that if you're dealing with autonomic nervous system, fantastic. You can do that. You don't need to be licensed. Just know how to get out of that when you end up running into it.
Yeah. I think that's the hardest part too, is like, I think it, all of us that are in this area of work, we're here to help people. Right. And we all have these like compassionate bleeding hearts. And so when stuff like that comes up, the first thing we want to do is try to help or try to fix it or try, you know, and that I think being able to politely and professionally kind of bow out of, you know, gracefully of those things when they come up, and then how do we connect them to someone who can help them with that? Right.
A little tip is maybe in your paperwork to say, who is your primary support person? You know, and you might even say, if something comes up, do I have your permission to contact? Now, some people have no primary supports. And so you need to know what agencies in the community where the people are coming from are available. But we do a little, that 6-week education. We have one called Just Because You Can Doesn't Mean You Should. And it's funny because I do that a lot. I'm really like, I don't go down rabbit holes because they just lead to more rabbit holes. Unless I'm doing individual trauma work. And then I really trust the collaboration with the client, with the horse, to take me where we need to go.
Right.
But I also check in and say, hey, is this where you want to go today? And sometimes they say, no, I just want to brush the horse. And it's like, all right, we don't have to.
Great. Let's do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be a therapist to practice with these principles. I mean, is anybody open to taking your certifications or your classes? Tell
anybody
me a little bit about
so
that.
Open. What we really feel with the certification, the accreditation, if you're a horse professional, we want you to have a record of being a horse professional.
Yeah.
But honestly, Katie, and this is not just because it's you, I think OTs are a natural connection with us. I think coaches are. They just have to want to work with us. When we have people work with us, we really want them to know who we are if they want to do our training. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of transparent. I think we're getting more and more folks. We're even getting, doctors, nurses, like understanding we have a personal and professional development 2-day workshop, which is really meant to just for you to figure out how you could be more effective in your communication.
Mm-hmm.
But as we're building pretty quickly, as I keep saying, we really want to have select sites where we know that people are.
Yeah.
Ridiculous just to assume we're the only people that work. We do. People are like, oh, Rebecca, you're wonderful, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm just a human being who's really a human being who I like to think I'm pretty authentic. I know there's other people out there too.
That's right.
So that's kind of
that therapeutic use of self is just, that's my favorite thing. I think I read maybe in your bio, maybe on the website, I can't remember, but it was, something about how authentic, kind, compassionate people. Like that's it.
That's what it is. It's healing from heart to heart.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you have a magic wand. It just means you collaborate. Curiosity, compassion, communication equals connection. Mm-hmm. And you say that over and over, and that's all ventral vagal pathway, ventral vagal engagement. Mm-hmm. Curiosity, compassion, communication equals connection. Mm-hmm. And it's like, to me, it's so obvious.
It is. And it makes it, and when you're a horse person too, you're like, duh, the horse is that's a horse in a nutshell, right? I mean,
and it changes your riding. For those of you that ride, like our work is mostly on the ground. Every once in a while, I'll send somebody that I've worked with for a long time to Margie for a lesson. She doesn't do a lot of it for like advance, but
yeah.
It's totally changed my riding. Like this horse of mine, who's like, I said to be really curious, like, why are you going up and down? And, it's funny, people, one lady in the barn, oh my God, it's his back, a veterinarian. The vet's like, nothing wrong with this horse, And so I would just be like, this is really curious. Why are we doing this? And then once I learned to just go 1-2 in my head with his rhythm, he stopped because he was so, it's just so interesting. So
yeah.
He's kind of like my master grand teacher. And I know we all have one in our own horses, but.
Yes, we do. So what makes what you do? I know you talked about it a little bit. What makes you guys different from some of the other models that are out there?
I think what really, really makes us different is the absolute belief that every single person and every nervous system is different. Mm-hmm. And unlocking the nervous system takes participation of horse, human, and facilitator. I also think what really makes us different, honestly, is that we've got years of experience doing this. So there's a lot of people that are starting doing this and good, yay, no competition. But I think what really makes us different is we have so many years of experience. Margie has over, 50 years as a really amazing, amazingly beautiful rider. And I think we're also getting concrete skills that can translate out of equine world.
Right.
And that's that thing with our polyvagal ponies. I want to be able to say, look, concretely, look, this is what it does. Mm-hmm. And we're recognizing the whole environment, not just the horse.
Yeah.
So I don't know, equine and arches. I love arch. I love the work they're doing. They're doing metaphor work, very different than what we're doing, different mm-hmm. angle.
Yeah.
But, I think that we just need to look for extreme quality where in every single place, the horse is acknowledged as a sentient, beautiful being that is just as much needed to be respected and treated with respect as we do. And they don't need to take the whole responsibility on for helping this person get better.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That piece that we're all as important part of the equation as each other, and the piece that how are we transitioning these skills? And I think taking that really, honestly, kind of scientific lens where it's like, this is our nervous system and this is biologically how we're wired. And that's science and that's real. And that's not just this like, oh, it feels good. It's like, that's because it's scientific, we're flexing those nerves and those muscles that will help us in the long run, no matter where we are. So,
and getting out of the brain stuff. I know everybody, the last 10 years all have been about amygdala and all these parts of the brain. I've studied it just like everybody else. I've, had a bunch of it in my doctoral degree, but to me, it's bottom-up processing from a very simplistic approach.
Yeah.
And I sometimes think, what would the horse think if I asked them, what about blah, blah, blah? I think they'd be like, is it time for dinner? What are we doing? And I don't think they're dumb at all. I just think they're safe. If they're not safe, they don't feel safe. So
they don't care what someone said to them 10 minutes ago or that someone pinned their ears at them yesterday. They don't care. There are so many times where I'm in a session and we're talking about something and I'm like, we just got to take a deep breath. And then it's like on command, the horse is like, and I'm like, thank you. Yes. That's what I'm talking about.
Some of the great dressage riders say that, as you probably know, that horses think in pictures. Mm. And I really wonder. And yet sometimes they finish the picture.
Right. Well, it's been such a joy getting to talk to you. I really, really have enjoyed it. And I think our listeners will really get a lot out of this too. And just so everybody knows, I will link your guys' website to in our show notes so they can find you guys. I guess we'll wrap up. So first, do you have anything else that you want to share with our listeners or things that you want them to know?
No, it's just delightful, Katie. And I hope you come to California and do a training with us. And so neat to be building and connecting with like-minded herds, because even in the horse world, there's different herds and that's all good.
That's right.
But what I'm starting to find is some of us are finding each other and it's just cool. That's all. So that's
it. I love that. And I think people should not be afraid to find their herd, whatever it is,
Exactly. That's that curiosity and compassion. And that's the last one is if you're curious and compassionate, you cannot be judgmental. And if you're judgmental, you cannot be curious and compassionate.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Okay. Well, before I let you go, Dr. Bailey, I do have a wrap up question. So every season we do something different questions. Over the last few years, we've done the podcast. And this year, the wrap up question that I'm asking my guests is, if you could get in a time machine and go back in time and give your young professional self some advice about something, what would you tell her?
I would tell her you're on the right track. All that, you don't do math, you can't do a foreign language, all those voices that said I couldn't, I would say you're on the right track, keep going. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of ways, I think that time machine was there with me because something kept me going through all of those are you sure you're smart? You're really stupid or all that stuff. That
internal monologue going. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So that's what I would do.
I love that. Very good. Well, thank you again. And hopefully our paths will cross again, maybe sometime soon. That'd be fantastic.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to another episode. Until the next one launches, stay connected to our community by joining the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook group. There, we share exclusive educational content, answer your questions, and review new and exciting developments for the EAS community. Don't forget, if you have suggestions for future episode topics or a lead on a great guest that you think our audience would enjoy, click on the link in the show notes or visit us at hetrauniversity.org. This podcast is presented by Hetra University, an educational arm of the Heartland Equine Therapeutic Riding Academy. Hetra University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to our participants and the EAS community. If you'd like to help us work toward our mission, you can make a donation by visiting us online at hetra.org. Again, I can't thank you all enough for helping Hetra change lives one stride at a time.